Kaya Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. My name's Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and creators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. With two feature films under his belt, Samuel Van Grunsven has quickly become a vital voice in Australian cinema. His feature debut, the lurid and sumptuous 2019 queer drama sequin in a blue room, utilised neon lights and lingering shots of yearning to amplify the sense of lead actor Connor Leach's youthful sequin, finding his place in a new, inviting world. With his follow-up feature, Went Up the Hill, Samuel, alongside regular co-writer Jorian Ast, explores facets of grief through a gothic possession drama. Here we follow Jack, Dacre Montgomery, who returns home to New Zealand for the funeral of his mother. There, he forms a fractious bond with Jill, Vicky Creeps, the widow of his mother. Where Sequin in a Blue Room explored different shades of blue, from bright neons to dark navies, Went Up the Hill immerses viewers in shades of grey, placing Jack and Jill in a brutalist-style home overlooking a cold lake. This is a film that's hard to shake. I first saw Went Up the Hill over a year ago, and there are moments in the film which have lingered in my mind in a way that haunts my dreams. The pairing of Dacre Montgomery and Vicky Creeps is a masterful one, with the two exploring emotionality in a way that we rarely get to see on screen in an Australian film. It is ostensibly a film about grief and the loss of someone in your life. For Jack, as an estranged son, he has grappled with processing that grief while his mother was alive, making her true passing feel like a new advent of grief and loss. For Jill, that grief is amplified by the arrival of Jack at her partner's house, and what that means for her ability to mourn the loss of her partner. These aspects, and many more, are tenderly explored in the film. In the following conversation, Samuel talks about that colour palette for the film, while also exploring the creative path that he found to explore grief on screen. At the end of this interview, I misquote the title of Max Porter's essential book about grief, his 2015 novella titled Grief is a Thing with Feathers. I want to read a quote from that book, which I feel touches on what this film is about. The quote goes, "Ghosts do not haunt, they regress. Just as when you need to go to sleep, you think of trees or lawns. You are taken instant symbolic refuge in a ready-made iconography of early safety and satisfaction. That exact place is where ghosts go." Again, I feel that quote really sums up what Went Up the Hill is about, and there is a lot to explore with the film. It arrives in Australian cinemas on the 11th of September, and it is a film that demands a big screen viewing, so please head along and see it in the cinema when you can. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We're a completely independent ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So visit patreon.com/thecurb.au to support our work from as little as a dollar a month. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. New interviews drop on Thursdays with bonus chats, just like this one, appearing on Tuesdays. And we've got a really good one coming up on this coming Thursday as well, where I'll be talking to Tom Phillips, the producer of Lesbian Space Princess, which is also in cinemas on September 11th. Another great Australian film for this year. Right, that's enough from me. Here's the trailer for Went Up the Hill, followed by my interview with Samuel Van Grunsven.
It is somewhat of a quiet comfort to be able to be here together.
Elizabeth survived by her two greatest loves. Her work and you. Her wife, Jill.
How did you know her?
I didn't. Or my son.
You should stay here. There's a room down the hallway.
You sleeping here?
Yes.
You okay?
She is okay.
Who is?
Jill.
Who are you?
Your mother.
Yeah.
been having trouble sleeping. I wake up in different places. I find my things in different places. As if someone's there. She's not gone.
Jill, stop.
She spoke to me too last night. She spoke through you.
We need him to be together like this.
For how long?
Until you're ready.
Ready for what?
To come to me. Just tell me the truth. Just say it.
I can't lose you twice.
Wonderful to be able to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
How are you doing?
Good, good. We're at the end now. This is our last festival. So, it's been a wild, like almost 9-month ride since Toronto. So it's nice. Like we release in the US in like 4 days or 5 days, and then release in Australia and a bunch of different territories sort of follow from there. So it's nice to find. It's finally going out.
It's got to be a bit of a relief, I imagine, because I remember seeing it at Adelaide last year and just being overwhelmed by it. And, you know, it's almost a year on and I'm still overwhelmed by the film.
Thank you.
Because it's what you're doing with stories, Sequin and now this, is quite unique. You know, you're presenting stories in a way that I guess from an Australian perspective we don't usually get to see on screen. You're using color profiles in ways that are just really pushing boundaries, but then you're also exploring queer stories in ways that we are kind of rediscovering how that should be. The language of queer cinema in Australia is being rewritten by filmmakers like yourself. It's a lot that we want to unpack there, but I want to start off by talking about your color profiles, because to go from the you know, the neon blues of Sequin, which was just such a sumptuous film, to the gothic greys here is quite something. Where does the color profile fit in your creative process when you're writing and creating a script like this?
Yeah, it's really early on. If my co-writer was here now, Jory, she'd say it's there from day one. I'm really visual. I write really visual. I co-write really visual screenplays. I'm like quite specific about it, but it's just like, you know, every film starts visually for me, and then I kind of jump off from there. But I typically, you know, I'm approaching my third film now, and I know the color profile for that. And I don't know where it comes from. I grew up, like, my family are professional impersonators, musical impersonators. Right. And so I grew up around people who, you know, whose job is to become someone else every night. But I guess more to the point on that is that I grew up with in a live music world where a lot of the storytelling is through, you know, the lighting on stage. And I always loved it. I loved like getting in the deep end. My brother's does the lighting for our family shows, and I always loved like getting in the deep end and like coming up with new ways and to you know, bring like an ABBA song to life with the lights. And I think it's just stuck in a way. And there's no better playground for lighting than film.
Yeah. So do you have a mood board? Like when you're sitting down with Jory, do you sit there and you say, we want this emotion, and then kind of have a color palette with it? Or how do you work that way?
Yeah. So I a big part of my process is I do these things called decks, which are basically like really long digital kind of documents where I'm really inspired. I'm less inspired by, you know, kind of rewatching films and sort of nailing down other cinematography, and more inspired by either painting or photography or artworks, or even like particular subjects like, you know, portraits and models and things like that. So I usually put one of those together for, that's just for me and Jory, and if the producers are on board at that point, them as well. just as a kind of jumping off point. But I think what I'm always trying to do, like I work on the music for the film really early as well, is like one of the hardest things to, as a director, to translate to your team is tone. You know, the English language is pretty limited and there's only so many ways you can describe something. And for me, music and visuals and being able to share those really, really early on is being as specific as I can with the team about what feeling and what tone I'm trying to capture. And then making sure we're all on the same page of running after that. And I love rules as a director. I think that the cleanest way to get sort of cross-pollination between the different departments, like costume and production design or cinematography. And if they're all working within the same confines, I find that they lean on each other more to overcome a challenge. And whether that's like, you need to be working with this texture so that I can have this texture that I really love because this is the color profile, this is the lighting. And I really enjoy that. So I'm pretty into coming out with a bunch of interesting challenges and rules early on that we can all kind of rally around.
I imagine for this one, you probably had a bunch of them, but I want to talk about the co-writing process with Jory first, and then we'll talk about some of those challenges too.
Yeah, sure.
How do you both come up with the idea? Is it sitting down over a drink and saying, I have this, and spilling?
Yeah, so we have this thing that we've now named. It's called Walk With Me. And it's basically, I typically come to Jory after about 6 months of like mulling around on what starts as like a visual thing, but then it turns into, I typically have the characters, I have the inciting incident, the problem that they're trying to overcome or the obstacle, and I have an idea of where the film ends, and then obviously I have tone and the feeling I'm trying to create. And then I come to Jory and we do really long, like whole day sessions where we call it Walk With Me because it's like, okay, we pitch each other a version of the film. Yeah. So it's like, Jory's really brilliant because she comes from an American school of filmmaking. So she'll do hilarious ones like, okay, if this film was a buddy comedy, it would be. And then she'd like, it's the same film, but within those conventions. Mm-hmm. And we do back and back and forth on that. And what we do is we take all the best bits from all those discoveries, write them down. And then at the end, we kind of, you know, begin to narrow down what the film actually is. But the origins with Jory, like the first few weeks are all about like detonating the idea. And then she just, the thing I love about working with her is she challenges me constantly the whole way to push it somewhere different or to go somewhere different. And then from there, we spend months on end in the same room, sitting next to each other with one screen, one keyboard, passing it back and forward and writing every word together.
Wow. Which is in itself sounds like a challenge.
It is, yeah. Luckily, we've been best friends since we were quite young. So since we were like late teens. So we don't get sick of each other.
Yeah. I think, you use that word challenge quite a bit in your creative process. And that scares some people because challenges mean that you're having to face possible failure, right?
Yeah.
And that's hard. So how do you get yourself comfortable with challenge?
I think it's part of the job.
Yep.
You have to be able to, I don't know, directing is so interesting in that, like, I think a lot of my job is often to provoke, but also to be provoked. And like working with Vicky, for example, was like one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And I learned so much as a director, but also as a person, because she's right in there making the film with you. You know, she can edit the film in her head while she's performing in a lot of ways, but she's also constantly alive and organic and in the moment. I learned a lot from that. But I think like the best work comes from that. I mean, the last thing I'd want is like everyone to just be running blindly toward what my first idea was. I got to work with Kirsty Cameron on this one, an incredible costume designer from New Zealand, and we're going to continue working together. And she's hilarious because she'll always just be like, you know, she'll be like, whatever my first idea is, she'll push back on so hard and like push us to the next best idea. And I guess I try and as best I can create that dynamic and make people feel comfortable doing that. But Yeah, I mean, it's something I'm still learning, to be honest.
But it creates powerful work, right? And
yeah.
I think that's what really stands out for me about your films is that, again, that mood, the emotion is what lingers.
Yeah.
And while it's been a while since I've seen Sequin, and When Up the Hill is just something that I can close my eyes and rewatch in my mind, it's that sense of feeling and knowing what that feeling feels like, right? And making it feel approachable for a lot of people, which then applying that with a queer story mindset too, like Sequin is you know, defiantly queer film, and so is Went Up the Hill, but it feels more kind of subdued in a way, as if it's clearly not the main part of the story, but it's there. And that's what I mean when I talk about you transferring or transforming what it means to be a queer storyteller in Australia and New Zealand at the moment. We don't get to see these kinds of queer stories on screen. Is that like changing what a queer story is for our cinema a conscious thing for you?
In a way, I'm really inspired by a particular movement of cinema, which is the the new queer cinema movement of the 90s. And I think a lot, I just fell in love with the energy of the early work of those directors like Gus Van Sant and Gregor Arke and Todd Haynes and Derek Jarman. And there's such a youthful, refusing to be kind of questioned or to over-question their own work energy to those early films. And I just love it. It's what made me fall in love with film. And I try and retain as much of that as I can. But, you know, if I pointed to someone specifically like Todd Haynes, he has forever been pushing the boundaries of what is a queer film. You know, there are films of his that don't feature a queer character at all or a queer storyline at all that I would still call queer films. Yeah. And to me, that's just so much more exciting, especially in a time where, you know, thankfully, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but like, we're seeing like the commercialization of queer cinema. It's becoming commercially viable. There's box office hits, mega hits that are queer films. And so for me, like being an indie queer filmmaker and, you know, being fortunate enough to make films on this side of the world is like, I can't help but kind of ask myself, like, well, what can we push next? What else can we do? And I definitely don't sit down and be like, I'm going to make a queer film. It just, I know my lane and I know I'm going to be better at writing a queer character. So I just try and stick in my lane.
Part of the reason why I ask is one of the things which I've been thinking about over the past couple of months is seeing Australia and going through a movement of new filmmakers. You're part of that movement and seeing people who are reacting against kind of the status quo and pushing against what has previously come from Australian cinema and saying, that's fine, but let's do something different. And so it's like you've got these two layers. You're influenced by the new queer cinema, and then you've got this, you know, finding a path forward for what Australian voices on screen looks like. And and Kiwi voices too, because, you know, New Zealand cinema is also trying to find its place in the modern world as well. And that's what this film is in so many different ways. Is that something that you, is that a conscious thought? Is it a discussion point that you have with people and saying, let's set a path for people to follow in the future?
I wouldn't say it's conscious, but I don't so much feel aware of it like when we're writing or when we're maybe not even when we're shooting, but when I'm in the edit and when we're releasing, I do, in the sense of like, I just feel really excited about what's happening in Australia right now.
It's like, good, isn't it?
I think like what the Philippi brothers have been doing is like so utterly inspiring, and the way in which they're bringing people into Australian cinemas, I think is so exciting. And then, you know, artists like Goran, I'm super inspired by, and even like the amazing success of Together. Like I guess to answer your question, like I do feel like there's a new energy maybe happening in Australia, and I get fueled by that in like a wanting to keep pushing way. And like actually being inspired by these amazing new filmmakers in Australia. And it's just really cool to see. And everyone's really, really different, but kind of adding something new and something challenging. And it's just a palpable energy. And I think that's exciting.
Yeah. And it's like you're feeding off each other's energy as well, right? You're saying, oh, you did this? Wow. That gives me inspiration to be able to do something in my own style, right? You don't have to imitate somebody. You can write your own language. And that's the thing which I think is so fascinating. You mentioned about the limitations of the English language and how hard that is. And yet you're using visuals. You're using the beauty of Dacre and Vicky. Their bond together is so powerful here. There's this brutalist architecture that you've got. There's the stark landscape there as well. So all of these things are adding layers upon layers that you can't even put into words. And yet, for me, the powerful thing is the summation of what grief means to people and how that actually lingers in us and the codependency as well of that. And this exploration of grief is something that's so powerful and so strong. And I guess that's the last thing I kind of want to explore with you a little bit is unpacking where this notion of grief come from. Where does this influence of grief sit with you and Jory?
Oh, gosh, a tricky one. It's, I guess, like, in a zoomed out way first, I was really interested in looking at it from a queer perspective, in that I think grief is, it's a major part of cinema in general, but within the genre space, whether it's a ghost story or a horror film, you know, it's a key ingredient often. And in knowing that I wanted to approach that in this film, I really want to be specific about it. Like what version of that are we doing? What period of that are we doing? What are we trying to do with it? And, so from the queer perspective first, I guess I wasn't so much drawn to like literal grief as opposed to like the absence of a figure in your life. And I think what's interesting and special about queer people is that sense of chosen family. And with Jack's character in particular, I was really drawn to the idea of a character who is running so fast towards this absence he feels of a maternal figure. And along the way, completely not registering these women who are willing to and have wanted to fill that role for him. And he's just not able to see it because he feels so deeply this utter absence of it. And that felt very connected to and honest to queer family dynamics. And that felt important to me and something that I knew I could sink my teeth into. And then I guess the other side of that was Jory and I wanted to be really specific about this is a film that is dealing with the first few days and the first weeks of grief when people, like your memories of the person you've lost are very recent memories. So like when you're trying to remember them, you can almost still hear them talk because you only heard it a few days ago. And something else that's interesting in those first few days and weeks is because they still feel so palpable and alive to you, you look for them in, you know, if it's the funeral, if there's family members there who maybe share the same laugh or have the same accent or, you know, do the same thing with their eyebrows, like the way they furrow their eyebrows, like there's all these reminders of them that keep them even more alive. And therefore your grief is like a suspended state of grief.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you're not fully sunken into it yet. And you're sort of existing above it. And then when you couple that with dealing with themes of possession, these are characters who are, you know, maybe the world is asking them to let go, but they are being held suspended and unable to. And the specificity of that felt like something that we could really drill into and wouldn't be so much of a broad concept that, you know, we'd get lost in the weeds on it. And I hope that's what we kind of brought to the screen.
Yeah, you really did. And again, that's that emotion that lingers. And I think, you know, it's grief is something we all go through. It's something that lingers. And was it Max Porter said, grief is a beast with wings? You know, it just kind of hovers and it hangs there and it's lingering. And I think the way that you presented in the film is the one thing that I will remember for a very long time. And
thank you.
It's powerful, powerful work. I don't know if you read our reviews or anything like that too much, but I'm curious when, like, Nadine compared your work to Bergman, basically, which is a huge, huge comparison. And I'm curious for you, when you read something like that, what does that mean to you as a filmmaker?
If I read it, I try not to read any of them. But if I do, I mean, it's flattering, but it's also I try and run away from it as fast as I can, because I don't know. I think there's so much like being in film and especially being a writer and director, it is utter highs and utter lows. There's not really a lot of middle ground. So I try and just keep moving because everything's quite fleeting.
Yes.
But no, it's very flattering. And I'm very thankful to the Dean for writing. That was very
That's
beautiful.
Good. Well, our time is up. It's been wonderful to be able to talk with you. I always love spending time in your world. And
thank you.
I look forward to seeing what you do next. Congratulations on the film,
Daniel. Thank you,
Andrew. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this chat with director Samuel Van Grinsven for his film Went Up the Hill, which launches in Australian cinemas on the 11th of September. Make sure to see this one in the cinema, folks. It's really good. Further interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'm Andrew Pearce, and I'll see you on the next one.